right, so I'm gonna use this arrow if I wanna point to something. And first I wanted to make a note before I start talking. When I first started this project, I had great aspirations. And I contacted Bill and I said, hi, Mr. Warner. What's going on with the revision of Chromasticylus? I want to know what's going on. And he said, well, it's in the works. And I said, okay, let's try to figure out a way for me to do a phylogenetic analysis. And so we did. And so what I have here is a phylogeny of Chromasticylus. So I'm going to warn the non-systematics people that there's going to be a lot of trees. So I'll try to go through the trees as fast as I can. And then the end of my talk is focused on little bit of what I know about Myrmecophily, which is really what I'm interested in. So once this is done, this is part of my dissertation, I hope that I can kind of delve into Myrmecophily as a whole. And then finally kind of a shout out to Bill, that I'm really excited about the revision, but for now, this is what I've done and I hope that you all learn something. And if you can't hear what I'm saying or I'm mumbling, just make sure that I know, all right? Alright, so Chromasticylus, of course, is a scarab within the Sotoniine subfamily and is related to other scarabs that feed on pollen, sap, and flowers. Chromasticylus is unique in being a predator. Not completely unique, though. Other Chromasticylines are also known to be predators on things like membracids and things like scale insects. But for the most part, biology for Chromasticylines are largely unknown. This was something that I thought I could solve in my naivete, but I didn't. So what I'm going to present here is basically a broad picture of what I know about Chromasticylus. It's a relatively small genus, about 45 species, including several subspecies, and 5 currently recognized subgenera. And these guys are distributed throughout North America, where the range of the entire group overlaps with ranges of a lot of ant genera. So these are predaceous on ant larvae or ant brood, and the larvae of the beetles, the grubs, will feed on vegetative material. So Formicine and Myrmecine ants, these are the two host subfamilies of Formicidae, provide a lot of vegetative material for larvae and then a lot of brood for the adults to feed on. And since these beetles have to somehow find their way into the ant mound, find their way to the brood chamber where they're going to feed on ant larvae, not be disturbed, which they're usually not, and somehow find their way out of the ant mound to either mate or disperse, they've acquired a lot of unique morphological adaptations like glands and trichomes. So the picture that you can see on the bottom left, or I guess on the bottom, there's just one, is a picture of the pronotal angle, the posterior pronotal angle, and those are typically associated with or have glands associated with them, and on the ventral side, this nice tomentum that's really, really obvious in Chromasticylus. So this pronotal angle is what makes Chromasticylus unique among the Chromasticylini, so we're going to focus on this a little bit. And again, I'll say that the biology is largely unknown, but I will point out some examples of what I know here. So the genus is extremely diverse, and this has caused, you know, contention over the years about what is a subgenus, what is Chromasticylus, which is what I was interested in. And so currently, based on Alpert's work in 1994, there are 5 subgenera recognized, the first being Chromasticylus. This one is recognized by the very obvious, there's like a declivity at the posterior end of the pronotum. Let me see if I can point to it. All right, right here. So there's this declivity, and in pretty much all of the species within this subgenus, this posterior angle is almost separate from the pronotum. Then there's Macropodina, which I like to call the big-footed beetles. If you look here at the foreleg, the fourth and fifth tarsomeres are extremely blown up, and so they have glands on the inside. Myrmecotonus, this is the one that's been a bit of a problem, and so I'm glad that I can show this because Bill and I both agree that this is probably kind of a trash pile group. Then we have Trinodia, which to me is one of the more interesting ones. this is the one on the bottom here, there's this obvious trilobe pronotum, thus the name Trinodia. And then we have Anatrinodia, which was previously thought to be a kind or a type of Trinodia based on what looks like a trilobe pronotum. And it turns out the lateral lobes in Anatrinodia, which is actually a monotypic subgenus, those lateral lobes are filled with glandular tissue. They have really large glands on the pronotum, where in Trinodia, the lateral lobes are filled with muscle. So that's definitely not a homologous character there. So just some taxonomic history. Horn was the first to do a revision on the group. He didn't recognize any subgenera, I guess mostly because there weren't a lot of specimens available to do this. Casey in 1915 established Chromasticylus, Trinodia, and Macropodina as separate genera, and then Chromasticylus wheeleri, which is then in that Anatrinodia group, the only species in that group, was classified as a type of Trinodia, and Myrmecotonus was kind of fudgy at that point. So then Kazir came along in 1938, did a second revision, and he recognized all as genera, except for Myrmecotonus, that trash pile group, and suggested that Macrobidina be a valid subgenus within Chromasticylus, as well as Trinodia and Anatrinodia. So this sounded good. Howden then questioned the validity of Myrmecotonus later, similar to Kazir and Casey, but kept it separate in a key. And the reason for this is that there are a couple of species groups that are really well defined. And then Crickin, again, made sure that Myrmecotonus was synonymized with Chromasticylus, the subgenus, and Alpert recognized all as subgenera in 1994. So my role was basically to test these previous hypotheses, or I guess I should say my goal was, and to basically see what the relationships among these subgenera are. So why is there so much confusion? So this acts as the first modern phylogenetic analysis using cladistic methods. And my real interest, the Myrmecophily, I was really hoping to examine some characters, and I do have some answers here, but mostly a question mark. All right, so I examined approximately 500 specimens from five collections with 40 Chromasticylus species as terminal taxa and three outgroup taxa in the tribe, Chromasticylini. I analyzed 51 external little characters using an older program when Clada and Nona, and the reason I did this was to look at the trees that would result. And then I kind of, you know, since my goal was to see how Myrmecophily evolves in this group, I kind of tie this in at the end. All right, so here is a tree, and I'm not expecting you to read numbers or names, really, so I'm going to point these out as we go along. There's relatively good support for the phylogeny. Chromasticylus turns out to be monophyletic and a valid genus. So what you can see, there's a lot of, I don't know, I call it comb action going on. You don't see a lot of resolution at the level of species, but there are several well-defined species groups and subgenera. So what I'm going to do here is go through the subgenera as I see them, and then I'll kind of tie in some characters. So here's Chromasticylus, the subgenus. This turns out to be monophyletic with relatively good support of 83%. So the strict consensus means that, let me go back to it, there were 200 equally parsimonious trees. Strict consensus means that only the clades supported in every one of those trees are shown here as resolved. So here Chromasticylus is monophyletic. Not a lot of resolution at the level of species, but regardless of that, there are some really good synapomorphies that group these beetles together. So the first that I noticed when I started looking at these is, if you look right here at the antennal insertion, there's this little tubercle with a little patch of hairs. There are glands associated with that internally. Now what these do, no idea. Then I'm gonna show again this, let me get the arrow, the declivity here that divides the posterior angles from the rest of the pronotum. This is very typical for the group. For Chromasticylus. And then if you look at the prosterm, this is actually very variable in the genus as a whole. There's this nice emargination, this cleft here. This basically isolates the anterior angle, which has a gland associated with it as well. This isn't unique to Chromasticylus, but it is a synapomorphy that groups these beetles together. And then finally, in most species except for two, you will see this nice, looks like a hole from this angle. The mentum on the ventral side of these beetles kind of covers up the rest of the mouth parts, which is almost unique to Chromasticylini as a tribe. And a lot of these specimens have this the hole, like an excavation at the base of that. The role for it isn't known, but it's definitely good character. Then Trinodia, this is definitely a monophyletic group. There's one species group that's well-defined here, which is the Hirsutus group, which you can see here, and the rest are just kind of laying out there. This first BS, which is actually a real word, is the bootstrap support of, looks like 98% or 96, I can't read. And then Bremer support of 5. So if you want to know what Bremer support is, I'll tell you that after my talk, but this definitely is a monophyletic group. So some of the characters that unite these guys are the trilopronotum, of course the lateral lobes being filled with muscle. If you look at the prosternum in these guys, you will see the similar cleft that we did in Chromasticylus right here, but there's this lobe that curves upwards towards the dorsum. Then we have the very unique looking head. So look at the strong constriction behind the eyes that forms a neck. If you look at the ocular canthus, this is very obvious in these guys. And then if you look at the basic shape of the clypeus, here's a better picture of the clypeal carina that runs, you know, between the clypeus and the fronds, and then this nice patch of hair. This is not unique to Trinodia, but it's definitely interesting. All right, and then Macropodina. This is the big-footed group. This is definitely a monophyletic group with 96% bootstrap and a Bremer support of 4, so excellent support here. And some of the synapomorphies, or the derived traits that unite these beetles, are the enlarged fourth and fifth tarsal segments, which bear glands inside. The role for these glands, unknown. And then similar, these beetles look almost like robots to me. They're very square-like and non-scarab looking. But if you look at the head, there's this lateral carina that runs right above the eyes. And the glands, there are glands associated with those internally, and they're identical to glands that you would find in the large feet. So it's been told that they would sometimes rub their long feet over their head, maybe to whack off ants. So that's an idea. And then the longitudinal carina on the pygidium, right here, which is unique to the group. Oops. And just the overall shape of the pronotum. There's this little emargination right posterior to the anterior angle. All right, then we get to Myrmecotonus, this interesting subgenus that by some is said to be a valid one, by others not. And here we get one nice species group, the Armatus group, the Crinitis group, and then the Chalmii group. Here's one species, and here's Chalmii and Westwoodi. Bill will probably do something with subspecies with this group, but I'm just going to work with these for now. So this is not a monophyletic group, although there are some species groups that fall out. And let me just show some synapomorphies for the species groups. Here's the Armatus group. They have this nice patch of tomentum, just a patch of hair at the base of the elytra. I'm guessing this has something to do with the glandular excretion. Maybe it sucks up the excretion and has something to do with the ants either attracted or repelled. Here is the Crinitis group. If you look at the mesipimeron, which is this flattened plate right anterior to the elytron, that's unique to the group. And then the Chalmii group, which turns out not to be a well-supported group here, has this entire prosternum. There's no notch there. These guys typically do. So I showed that with the Chromasticylus group. And then Anatrinodia. This is the one that was previously united with Trinodia down here, based on what looks like lateral lobes or the trilopronotum. And this was actually very problematic. This species shares a lot of characters with various species within this group. So if we can call this the Myrmecotonus Chromasticylus clade, it jumped around everywhere. So what I decided to do was to take it out of the analysis, and you will find that there's actually better support for some of the groups. So let's look at chromastochilus here, better structure as compared to previously with Wheeleri in the analysis. Macropodina turns out to be pretty much the same with similar support. Trinodia, here we see some better supportive species groups at least as compared to previously. The Hirsutus group falls out again. And then Myrmecotonus, this is pretty interesting to me at least. Here is the Armatus group, here is the Crinitus group, and the Chalmii group falls out as its own clade. It's not even close to the other Myrmecotonus chromastochilus group. So we want to include all of our taxa in the analysis, so I'm not saying that we should take it out, but maybe reevaluating characters with Anatrinodia would be wise. And if there are studies done at a higher level within the Chromastochilini, it might turn out that Anatrinodia could be its own genus. So there is the tree previously, so with Wheeleri included. All right, so some conclusions as far as the phylogenetic analysis is that Myrmecotonus is not monophyletic and should be synonymized with Chromastochilus sensu stricto based on a lack of characters or synapomorphies that group the entire subgenus together. There are well-defined species groups, and depending on what work is done at the higher level, it might be decided that those are separate genera if you want to be a splitter at that point. And then there's good support for other subgenera and species groups, which support hypotheses of previous authors like Howden, Kazir, Casey. And then Chromastochilus wheeleri, that weird one, is closely related to the Chromastochilus myrmecotonus group. But where it goes at this point, I would say it goes in there, but how, not sure yet. All right, so my real interest here, like I said, was Myrmecophily. So I'm going to elaborate on the mysteries here. It's definitely a mystery. Imagine an ant mound, if you will. So that might be a typical Formica ant mound. Large, easily recognizable. What does it take for a beetle to traverse the inside of that ant mound, find its way to the brood chamber, either be carried in by ants or make its way into the ant mound, and then interact with those ants? What does it take? So my idea is that with the origin of Myrmecophily, there was this great radiation. Most of these species are found, or I guess most of the subgenera are found throughout the West, Chromastochilus being the only one that's situated in the eastern states. So here are some pictures of some ant hosts. Starting at the bottom, you will notice that this is very weird. These are not ants. One species within Macropodina is actually found with Dipodomice or kangaroo rats and Neotoma pack rats. So they've never been associated with ants, and we don't really know. Maybe there are ant mounds within the nest that you will typically find. Are they interacting with the ants in there? No idea. The other species within this group are often found with Camponotus or Myrmecocystis, the honeypot ants. Trinodia, to me, is the only one that really seems to be very specific as far as the subgenus goes. Note that species within Chromastochilus are extremely host-specific, but at the level of subgenus, there doesn't seem to be a lot of host fidelity at the larger level. Trinodia is found exclusively with Pogonomyrmex ants. If you've ever encountered Pogonomyrmex ants in the wild, they're extremely ferocious. Probably the most venomous group of insects there are. So Trinodia is doing something. The morphology itself says that they're doing something interesting with these ants. And then Anatrinodia is found only with Formica. Here we have Lasius and Camponotus for Myrmecotonus, Chromastochilus species being found with several genera of ants. I'm just showing a picture here of Myrmecocystis. So my idea is that there was this great radiation, and maybe there hasn't been enough time for these different subgenera to really split into what would become different species groups or so on, so we can't really say anything about Myrmecophily is related to the phylogeny. And then let me just show you an example of some of the variation as far as behavior goes. So I have a little snippet of the, here's, this is Trinodia here at the top, Trinodia at the bottom without Wheeler eye. Right, here's a picture of Chromasticylus hirsutus, the host being Pogonomyrmex. This guy enters mounds actively, so it will actively search for a mound, drop down, and then enter by itself. And this is found here within the species group. Then we have Trinodia statamae, which is usually feigns death, pretending to be dead, and then gets carried into the ant mound. So here we go, here's statamae here. In a different species group, if you want to say that. There's a lot of variation just within one subgenus, or even among the different species groups. So this is just to point out that we really can't make any predictions about what these beetles would do or what the phylogeny says about Myrmecophily, or vice versa. So I just wanted to point out some characters that are extremely variable. So if we imagine these beetles interacting with ants, the posterior pronotal angles, which is here, so this is in Trinodia, these are extremely variable. And if you know anything about cladistic analyses, there's this measure called the consistency index. And if that measure is really low, it means that the character pops up several times in different groups. So the posterior pronotal angle is extremely homoplasious, showing up several times. Same with the anterior pronotal angle. The flattened posterior femora show up in several unrelated groups. The patches on the clypeus, patches of hair, show up in several groups. And then the overall shape of the legs is extremely variable. So even though this is unique to Macropodina, here we see a four-segmented tarsus. This is unique even within the scarabs. Some dung beetles have four-segmented tarsi, but there's one species that has four segments on all legs. So this is just to point out that there's a lot of variation within the group. And due to that, I would really like to see maybe more, I'm going to kind of skip this slide, maybe more work done at the molecular level. I have at the moment about 8 species, and that's not enough to do any morphological or molecular work. I have 8 species in alcohol, and everything else is really old specimens. Higher level work at the chromasticyline level, so within the tribe, this would be nice, but hard to do. And then behavioral work. This has been attempted several times, and there is some behavioral data, but at the level of, you know, at the greater level of the genus, it's really not known. They do interact with ants, and that's all we know. And I'd like to acknowledge the following people, and then especially Bill. I wanted to thank you for all your help and for all the conversations that we've had, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what you're gonna say about the group. So thank you, and I'll take any questions. I will take anything I can get.
Well, I mean,
anything.
Are the females known and everything?
Oh yeah, females are known.
So they both
mill
around?
Yeah, yeah. So, typically the females will dig into the sand to find, you know, I'm not going to say anything about behavior, but yeah, anything you can send. Females, males.
Are they dimorphic at all?
There is a little spur at the tip of the fore-tibia that's different in the males and females, and usually the abdomen is kind of convex in the females.
But they're not dimorphic in, like, the gland?
No, not that I know of.
Okay.
Okay?
Thanks, Clay.